Member Week is here at Lowe's. That means it's time for MyLowe's Rewards members to save big with up to 40% off hundreds of items like appliances, tools, home essentials, and more. Plus, get free standard shipping. Shop these exclusive member-only savings now through October 15th. Not a rewards member? Join for free today. Free standard shipping not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Before we dive in, a quick note. You can support the In Between podcast just by shopping on Amazon. Use my affiliate link in the show notes. Every purchase sends a little bit back to help cover transcripts, travel, and reporting. And it doesn't cost you anything extra, but it makes a huge difference. Or if you want more access, exclusive bonus content, and deeper dives into the cases I cover, join me in the Investigator Club at patreon.com/ The In Between podcast with Mel Barrett. Just $4 gets you access, and your support helps keep my reporting independent and moving forward. This episode of The In Between is intended for mature audiences and includes topics such as emotional, sexual, and physical violence. Testimony shared by guests of the show is their own and does not reflect the views of Mel Barrett or Ruby Grace Productions. Listener discretion is advised.
I don't see her moving.
Okay, do you know how to do CPR?
I don't.
Okay, I can tell you what to do, okay, until they get there. I want you to keep her foot.
Oh, God.
Hello?
Yeah, hi, okay.
Are you willing to do CPR with me over the phone until they get there?
I have to, right?
Okay, so get her foot on her back, bare her chest, okay? You want to rip her shirt off?
Her shirt won't come off. It's a zipper.
Rip it off.
She stabbed herself.
Where?
She fell with a knife. Oh, no, her knife's sticking out.
Her what?
There's a knife sticking out of her heart.
Back then, her death was ruled a suicide, a decision her family has been fighting ever since.
And today they received a long-awaited report that could determine if a crime was committed. NBC10's Brian Sheehan spoke with Ellen's parents as they continue their search for answers.
The Chester County DA's office did the most limited investigation.
The Chester County District Attorney's Office revealing today their 2-year investigation into the death of Ellen Greenberg, resulting in no criminal charges.
And I still don't know what they were investigating. Were they investigating looking for a homicide, or Ellen did not commit suicide?
Josh and Sandy Greenberg's 27-year-old daughter and only child, Ellen, was discovered by her fiancé in the kitchen of their Manayunk apartment in January 2011. The elementary school teacher had been stabbed 20 times. The Philadelphia Medical Examiner originally ruled her manner of death a suicide, then changed it to homicide before switching it back to suicide. Her parents, Josh and Sandy, believe she was murdered and have been fighting with the city of Philadelphia for more than a decade.
Welcome back to the In Between podcast. I'm your host, Mel Barrett. This week, we're stepping back into the Ellen Greenberg case, a story that begins with science and keeps running headlong into politics. I'm covering Ellen now because it feels like then Attorney General, now Governor, Josh Shapiro, keeps his distance from cases that are politically complicated for him. My most recent season's subject, Veronica Rodriguez, is one example. Veronica's friends, family, and local activists have repeatedly reached out to Governor Shapiro's office, asking him to review her case and examine how District Attorney Pierre Hess Graff handled it. What they've gotten back is silence. His role in setting tone for how local counties investigate and enforce the law is crucial. Yet on cases like Veronica's or Ellen's, the governor seems absent. Ellen Greenberg was more than a young teacher found dead behind a locked door with 20 stab wounds, including to the back of her head and neck. She was also caught in a system that often moves when it's easy and stalls when it isn't. When evidence points one way and institutions drift another, that's where this show lives. Last episode, we walked the timeline from 2011 through the courtroom trench wars of 2025. Today, I want to live in the space between what the body tells us and what the paperwork still says, and ask why it took police, prosecutors, the attorney general, and the coroner nearly 15 years to promise a genuine re-examination. We like to believe science has the last word. In unattended deaths, it rarely does. People do. People with clipboards and checkboxes, statutes and supervisors. People with budgets to protect, and sometimes ambitions to nurture. That's why we have to talk about power, because cause and manner of death isn't just anatomy, it's governance. When Ellen's parents pushed back on the suicide ruling, Philadelphia's DA recused. The case file went to Pennsylvania's Attorney General, Josh Shapiro. His office reviewed for years and still affirmed suicide. Later, citing the appearance of a conflict, the case was referred to Chester County. An AG's concurrence doesn't legally bind a medical examiner, but it throws a heavy blanket over a room. Once the most powerful law office in the state says, "We looked and we agree," that statement becomes institutional permission to stop asking hard questions. And here's where the personal ties come into view. Ellen's fiancé, Sam Goldberg, came from a well-connected family. When he discovered Ellen's body, his first calls weren't to 911. They were to his uncle and cousin, Judge James Schwartzman and attorney Kamian Schwartzman. According to the family's attorney, they had to urge Sam to hang up and call emergency services. Judge Schwartzman then showed up at Ellen's apartment within hours and was allowed into what should have been a sealed crime scene. He left with laptops, cell phones, and even Ellen's handbag. Police later returned with a warrant and retrieved those items, but by then, the chain of custody was broken. As Ellen's father said, quote, "The chain of custody was broken from the very beginning when Jim Schwartzman removed computers, electronics, my daughter's handbag," end quote. Judge James Schwartzman isn't just any judge. He is one of the most powerful in Pennsylvania, with decades on the bench and a reputation for influence. He has also long moved in the same social and political circles as Josh Shapiro. Members of the Goldberg and Schwartzman families, including Kimby Schwartzman Kimmel, Sam's cousin, and her husband Wayne Kimmel, attended the same elite Jewish day school as Shapiro, sat on the same boards, hosted fundraisers, and even donated to Shapiro's campaigns. Shapiro once publicly referred to Kimby and Wayne Kimmel as friends. Their children attended the same school as the Shapiro's children, sometimes even on the same sports teams. These aren't distant acquaintances. They are community ties, social ties, donor ties. Judge Schwartzman himself has been described as a big and generous donor to Shapiro's campaigns. So when the Attorney General's office under Josh Shapiro affirmed suicide in Ellen's case, the optics were impossible to ignore. No one is saying Shapiro picked up the phone and ordered anyone to protect his friends. But the gravity of those relationships created an inertia. Once his office weighed in, it gave cover for institutions to stop asking questions. In government, gravity is the weight of established narrative bolstered by powerful connections. Shapiro is now governor in a state where death investigation is a patchwork. Some counties appoint medical examiners, others elect coroners. Expertise varies, funding is political, and the relationships between police, prosecutors, and medical examiner offices can be collegial and sometimes a little too cozy. Ellen's case is a case study in what happens when that coziness interacts with tragedy. This matters beyond Ellen. When Sandra Birchmore died, the story didn't end in her apartment. It echoed through a police department determined to protect itself. In Karen Reed's case, institutional self-protection sprinted ahead of the science. And with Veronica Rodriguez, her family says that ties between law enforcement and the DA's office suffocated the facts. And there was never really an investigation, let's be honest. Veronica's family has asked Governor Shapiro for an independent review of Pierre Hess Graf's handling of Veronica's case. So far, nothing. To officials, silence might look like caution. To grieving families, it looks like abandonment. Let's pause and remember how these decisions are supposed to work. First comes the scene and the story. Who last saw the person alive? What medications were they taking? What prior injuries they had? What neighbors and phones can tell us? That scaffolding supports the next step, which is the autopsy and the tests. Photographing, documenting, weighing, sampling, running toxicology, and when needed, neuropathology or histology. Finally comes the synthesis. Cause of death is the mechanism. Manner of death is the category. Things go wrong when these steps are rushed, biased, or bent. Cleaning an apartment the very next day cripples the scene component. Biases the synthesis. Institutional pressure nudges undetermined towards suicide because it's administratively tidy. When a scene is compromised and the injuries don't resemble a textbook suicide, the honest answer is undetermined. This isn't indecision, it's intellectual honesty. You can always revisit undetermined. Calling suicide in a 20-wound back-of-the-neck case isn't conservative, it's reckless. In February 2025, on the eve of trial, the city of Philadelphia settled with the Greenbergs. The medical examiner's office agreed to re-examine Ellen's manner of death, and Dr. Marlon Osborne, the original pathologist, signed a sworn statement saying it should not have been called suicide. That kind of recantation is almost unheard of. It shows that individuals can change their minds, but institutions might resist. And yet months later, the re-examination drags, promises slip, bureaucracy does what bureaucracy does. Meanwhile, the public keeps tapping the glass. We've seen undeserved certainty before. In Karen Reed, certainty arrived before the evidence did. In Sandra Birchmore, certainty ignored 30,000 text messages that pointed elsewhere. And in Veronica's case, certainty protected people first and the investigation last. Mislabel a homicide or a sexual assault, and you don't just get the past wrong. You put the future at risk, leaving predators or killers free. In Pennsylvania, many coroners are elected, and many medical examiners are appointed by people who answer to other people. Budgets get blessed downtown, promotions favor harmony with police and prosecutors. No one writes protect the narrative on a job description, but the pressure is real. If you sit in the big chairs, governor, attorney general, district attorney, you set the tone.
Hey, welcome to the governor's residence. Come on in, guys.
Governor Shapiro, hi.
What's up?
Thank you so much for fitting in a 48-question interview into your busy schedule.
48? Oh, my gosh.
All right. Let's do this.
Come on.
So what's keeping you busy these days?
Everything. I mean, we're trying to get our budget passed, trying to protect people's freedoms, deal with the craziness in Washington. It's a lot, but I love what I do and grateful for the chance to do it.
What is the most exciting thing in your life?
I mean, it's always my family, right? I mean, Laura and I are blessed with four kids. They're doing amazing stuff every day. But I guess professionally, it's getting the chance to get out on the road, see people where they are, see the difference they're making in their communities. I love that.
And what inspires you to keep going?
The people I meet along the way, the people who have like serious challenges every day that need our help. And when we can deliver for them, man, there's nothing better than that.
So what keeps you up at night?
You ever been here before?
No,
never. Feel really blessed to be here. What keeps me up at night?
Yeah.
The people, I know I sound like a broken record, but the people I meet along the way who have serious challenges, serious needs, who are either getting hurt in Washington or hurt by something in their community, and I just want to do right by them.
Governor Shapiro could set that tone right now. He could publicly demand that the Philadelphia medical examiner finish the reexamination of Ellen's case and release the findings on a fixed timeline. He could direct state resources, neuropathology consultants, forensic specialists, grant funds to support that work. He could propose statewide rules that default to undetermined when scenes are compromised or injuries are atypical for suicide. He could require independent neuropathology reviews for spinal or intracranial injuries. He could firewall death investigation budgets from police and prosecutors so they aren't beholden to the very agencies they may need to contradict. He could insist on outside review panels for controversial cases and require that families get consistent, reliable updates instead of silence. And in Veronica's case, he could support an independent review of Pierre Hesgraf's actions so that community trust isn't left to rot. Justice for Ellen starts with the record. Change the manner of death to what the evidence supports, homicide, or at the very least, undetermined, and then do what should have been done in 2011. Treat her case like the violent death it appears to be and follow the evidence wherever it goes, no matter who your friends are. And justice for Veronica starts with sunlight, an honest, independent look at decisions being made behind closed doors. Families and communities shouldn't have to beg for an independent set of eyes when confidence in local authorities has been fractured. And believe me, in Lebanon County, Pennsylvania, confidence in local authorities like DA Pierre Hesgraf is completely broken. To Sanders community, to those watching every turn in Karen Reed's case, and to Veronica's supporters, the pattern is the point. The same dynamics repeat, and unless people in power act, they will keep repeating. Systems don't fix themselves. People do. The In Between podcast is written, edited, and hosted by me, Mel Barrett, and is a production of Ruby Grace Productions. If you want ad-free exclusive content, bonuses, and lives, head on over to the In Between podcast Patreon and sign up. The researcher level starts at $6, and there's already 20-plus ad-free episodes for you to binge right now. Special thanks to Amber Hunt for editorial guidance, as well as the rest of the team at Grabbag Collab, Amanda Rossman, and Daisy Egan, for their support and guidance. Another special thanks to Rebecca Lavoy for her friendship and mentorship. You can catch me and Rebecca recapping the Karen Reed trial on the Crime Writers On, The Readathon. Follow the In Between podcast on Blue Sky, Facebook, and YouTube at In Between Pod, and on Instagram at The In Between Pod Official. On TikTok, you can follow me at Jack of All Trades DC. Thanks for listening.